Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, MEAC fans, it's time to step into a championship.
The 2023 MEAC Men's and Women's Basketball Tournament tips off March 8th through the 11th at the Scope Arena in Norfolk, Virginia. Join all the MEACtion with competitive basketball games, fun theme nights, and fan fests, official after parties, and comedy shows. Tickets are on sale via Ticketmaster, and you can log on to meachoops.com for more info. The 2023 MEAC Basketball Tournament. Who will be crowned champion?
Welcome to the Fantrax Toolshed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From dynasty to prospects to redraft, we got you covered. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clay.
Welcome into episode 171 of the Toolshed with Clayton Cross, powered by Fantrax and FantraxHQ.com. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We will be continuing our shortstop discussion in this episode. Had to, on the fly, kind of this in the two episodes because there's so many fun players to talk about that we couldn't fit it all in one episode without it being nearly 2 hours. So we're back here again, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, what's up, bud?
Not too much. It's just like we did this, and we did, but like you said, shortstop's deep. It's fun. There's a lot to talk about, so we had to cut it into two. Hopefully you're okay with that. I hope that you're not upset that you're getting another episode from us. We're excited. Hope you are too.
I know. How dare we do more episodes?
Right.
How dare we? I know. We'll probably do the same thing for outfield too, maybe even pitcher. I don't know. We'll figure that out beforehand, so we're not doing it on the fly like we did last episode. But yeah, you know, it's fine for a catcher, first, second, third. But yeah, once you get into, especially shortstop, outfield, and pitcher, those are the three beasts, obviously. So hard to really condense this. There's all these players we want to talk about and the risers and fallers and have some debates. And then all of a sudden, we're like, hey, 45 minutes in and we're halfway through. So yeah, It's always fun, this position, and we'll get into the dynasty side of it today. So no prospect talk, just the major league guys here. Obviously, we'll mention our rankings, which will include prospects, obviously, but the discussion points will all be on the major league side of things. Before we do, some quick housekeeping here. You can follow us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. And our show's at FanTrax Toolshed. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review. Those ratings and reviews do mean a lot. Check out my Patreon for more work from me and Chris's Substack for more work from him. And make sure to check out all the great stuff that FanTrax and FanTrax HQ have to offer. 2023 Fantasy Baseball Leagues are all open. Again, best balls, drafted holds, classic drafts, everything. So if you got that itch, go over there and join up, you know, existing league, move your leagues over today. A lot of good stuff over there on the platform. And on the HQ content side, our 2023 Fantasy Baseball Draft Kit kicked off earlier this week as well. Be a lot of fun stuff in there. Obviously, dynasty and prospect stuff, rankings, strategies, sleepers, busts, you know, mock drafts, all the good stuff. So check that out as well. All right, let's get into it here with our dynasty shortstop rankings. Let's break it up. Let's go 10 at a time here, even though we could go bigger chunks. But I think that's easier to do chunks of 10 here. So, Chris, who are your top 10 dynasty shortstop rankings?
All right. So I've got Trey Turner at the top, followed by Bobby Witt Jr., Fernando Tatis Jr. These are an interesting tier of guys right here, I think. So I guess we can talk more about that when we really dive in. But you have it kind of inverse of me a little bit. But 4 is Bo Bichette. 5 is Francisco Lindor. 6 is Wander Franco. 7, Corey Seager. 8 is Ellie De La Cruz. 9 is O'Neill Cruz. And 10 is Tim Anderson, which I'm not even sure I like Tim Anderson in that spot. I'm probably going to adjust the ranking on the fly here, just reading them like a, like that. So
it's a tool shed tradition to adjust on the fly. We do that because it's good to have these episodes too. Like, obviously we hope you all enjoy it, but, and we're always looking at our rankings from, you know, team perspectives, positional perspectives, but sometimes you don't really see something until we talk about it and like, oh yeah, why do I have this guy behind this guy? So this is good for us as well and helps us kind of fine tune our rankings a bit more.
I moved him down, which bumps Carlos Correa in a 10 spot.
Cool. Carlos Correa. So O'Neill Cruz 9, Correa 10.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So like the first 4, I struggle. Like the first 4 are clear cut top tier for me. I struggle with the order and it's gone back and forth a few times. But for now, I still have Tatis at 1. It's risky as heck. I know it. But obviously, we saw what he can do just like 130 games back in 2021. Then I have Turner 2, Witt 3, which they're back to back. I might flip flop, but I probably will flip flop and put Witt 2, Turner 3. Then Bichette 4, Wander Franco 5, Lindor 6, Gunnar Henderson at 7, O'Neill Cruz 8, Xander Bogaerts 9, and Dansby Swanson 10. All right, so let's talk about that top tier there. Tatis, Turner, Witt, Bichette. So we both have Bo at 4, but that still is, I think, what do I have him overall, like 13 or 14? I'm sure you, is he still top 20 for you, Bo Bichette?
Yeah, he is. And okay. I had, like, I don't know. It was a weird case. Like, at some point in the season, I was like, man, I really need to drop him. And I think I dropped him to, like, 30. And I was like, oh, that's just not.
And then he went on a tear in the second half of the year.
Okay, I was wrong. He's at 19th for me overall. Okay.
Yeah, so number 4 there for both of us, but still top 20. I think I have him 14 or what? I have my spreadsheet up. Let me just take a look at that real quick to give you the exact number here. Yeah, I have Bo Bichette at, 14. Okay, I knew he was right in that range. And then I have, Turner and Witt are back-to-back 7 and 8, and I have Tatis at 5 with Kyle Tucker sandwiched in the middle of them. And I really struggle with this. Obviously, I think the highest upside of this group is Tatis. We saw it, 42-25 in just 130 games. All the power speed metrics are there, but obviously he's, injured way too much and had some, other off-the-field stuff to kind of limit his time on the field as well. Hearing that San Diego might want to trade him, which kind of signals that they're kind of fed up with him, at least in my eyes. Like, only time you'd ever want to trade a guy like Tatis is if you're like, all right, we're done dealing with this stuff. So he's tough to rank. I could see Bobby Witt Jr. going up to number 1. this year. I really could. I love Bobby Witt Jr., obviously. You have him at two. People are kind of knocking him, like, all right, well, his OPS isn't high or stuff like that. And like, all right, that's that, sure. But he is a potential, like, he could put up a 30-40 or 30-35 year or something like that at one point. And it wouldn't surprise me. It could happen this year. He was 20-30 this past year, one of the only rookies ever to do that. And why are we not expecting some realistic growth in his second full year as a young 22-year-old player? Why can't he get the average up a little bit? He hit for a higher average in the minor leagues. Is probably not a 300 hitter, but could he be 270 as opposed to what he hit, 252, I think it was? Sure, I think he'd get the average up a little bit. Maybe never will be a super high OBP guy, but he did show more patience in the minor league. So I think both the average and OBP will probably go up this year. And I won't be surprised to see him go 25-35 this year as a 22-year-old. So we could be looking at Witt Jr. as the new number one here pretty damn soon.
Yeah, it could be interesting. I'm not sure he gets to number one overall.
Not overall, but at this position. Shortstop. I mean,
yeah, the shortstop position, I could see. I think it's kind of fluid at the top.
Yeah.
He said Turner's got the age going against him. Tatis is still a question mark, even though Tatis' talent level is number one by far, I think. Him and Acuna are easily like 1-2 on just pure fantasy upside and talent. But Tatis just has the question marks, which that is concerning. So there's the top three. Like you said, it's pretty clear. And there's a drop off to Bo. But I have Turner 8th overall, Witt 9th overall, and Tatis 11th overall in my overall rankings. So it could all change pretty quickly, I think. And like you said, with Witt, I think there's a lot to like. We're at the point where he could take that step. I don't see why we think that he's going to regress. He's got the ballpark working against him, but it didn't seem to affect him. He still went 20-30, and he hits the ball hard. Like, I think he could probably transcend Kauffman, even though it probably took a couple of home runs from him last year. He's still young, and I think there's a step forward in a lot of areas of his game next year. So 25-25 is probably pretty realistic with 260-270 average. Like, I think that has a chance to push him over Trey with Trey's age. Like, I think there's a chance that the decline for Trey could be, in the next couple of years.
That is a perfect segue, because that's what I was about to ask, is when do we think that is going to happen? I don't think he's a fall off a cliff. Let me just get that out of the way to start. But, with a guy that had, obviously he's a great bat as well. But, I think the number one driving factor to his fantasy value is the speed. Now, he's been a 30-plus steal guy for a long time now, and one of the, the fastest players in baseball. Okay, he only had 27 last year, but, still has the great sprint speeds. So we got to wonder, he's 29 now. He's the oldest of this group by a few years. I'm going to look at it. So he is 29.3, Tatis 23.8, Witt 22.3, and Bichette 24.6. So by a little under 5 years, the oldest. So how long are we going to keep him, top five, top 10 range if the speed starts going down? Or like, when does he start trending down, Chris? Do you think this will happen, next year, year after? He's obviously in a new ballpark now, new team, the Philadelphia Phillies. So I don't think that'll hurt him much at all. That's obviously a great lineup, great ballpark as well. But how long do you think he's a top 10 guy? I guess is the question here.
Yeah, that's tough. I think I feel pretty good about this year at least, and probably even into next year. I don't know. I'm just kind of looking at Whit Merrifield, and I know this is not even a similar comp because Whit never had the power Trey did. But from a speed standpoint, I mean, we saw those steals fall off with Merrifield this year where he only stole 16. And I think we feel like that he completely lost playing time, and he still had 550 plate appearances. And he stole just 16 bags. And Merrifield is 33. How old did you say Trey was? He is
about 29 and a half.
Okay. So I'll give him at least, I say two more full seasons as a top 10 guy. But I think you have to be willing to trade him if you get the right offer. Like, if it comes around, like, and I get a good offer for Trey, like, I'm not going to be opposed to moving that. If you have enough speed, like, if you can absorb the loss of his stolen bases, then yeah, I think you look to move Trey Turner and cash out high. Now, maybe there's still more value to gain, but I don't know. Like, I just feel like his value's probably peaked at this point.
Yeah, no, he is entering the prime, like, retooling trade kind of window for an elite player. It's similar to, I traded Mookie Betts in my home keeper league. I think it was, when was it? A couple years ago. I think it was pre-2020 season. I think right before the pandemic, actually, funny to say. But I traded Mookie Betts for, I believe it was Bo Bichette and a draft pick, which I turned into Luis Robert, I want to say. So you might, doing these trades, you might take a minor step back, you know, not a big step back, but a minor step back in the short term, but potential for a lot, like a big win long term, and, you know, an even bigger win long term than maybe the loss is short term. And I look back and, you know, I have Bo Bichette ranked right next to Mookie Betts in my rankings right now. And, you know, I got basically Luis Robert out of it, who obviously talented, but flawed. That's a, you know, subject for next episode. But yeah, so that's the type of deals I like to do. You get these guys that are, you know, still great, but getting into their, you know, he's 29, 30 season. Because I think when people see the, you know, 28, 29 is almost a great time. Like Bryce Harper is almost entering that range as well. Like these superstars that are right around 30, you know, they still have a ton of great value, but that's the type of guy, like, all right, trade for a guy that you think can be just as good and then get a good second piece, kind of like the deal I just mentioned. So I wouldn't be opposed to that. That's not us saying, hey, go out and trade Trey Turner right now. No, obviously we're not saying that, so don't, nobody take it that way. But, you know, it couldn't hurt to, you know, listen to offers and see, you know, you might be surprised. Like, you never know what you can get until you listen to offers, obviously. You know, Captain Obvious over here, but sometimes you might get an offer, you're like, wow, that even exceeds anything I thought I could get for a guy like Trey Turner. So it can't hurt to at least listen to those offers is kind of what we're saying here. But moving to the next little section of our rankings here, I think two guys in particular are very, very interesting for very different reasons. First off, Wander Franco, the uber prospect. You've been dealing with a little bit of injuries here, limited to 344 plate appearances this past year, and wasn't really that impressive in those 344 plate appearances. 6 home runs, 8 steals, 277, 328, 417 slash line. You know, he's fine, but looking at, we now have over 500, we have 530 batted ball events in his career. He's got a 4.7 barrel rate. Again, still young, uber talented. Don't take this the wrong way, but, you know, exit velocities have not been anything special. Hard hit rates, these are all kind of right around league average. The elite approach is there. So I think there's no doubt that Wander Franco is going to be a very, very good real life player. But how good is he going to be fantasy, Chris? I think that's still the thing. Like, how much power does he get to? How much does he run? Is he going to be an Aussie Albies with higher average, or is he going to be more of a, I hate to say this, but a slightly better, you know, a more toolsy Jeff McNeil? You know, like, is he 18 home runs and 8 steals with a 300 average? I don't know. Where are you valuing Franco right now? What do you think he can be?
I think that, honestly, like, it's a great buy low right now. It's
just I agree
funny
with that.
How quick everybody jumped off. And we're talking about someone that everyone was so sure was the, like, a surefire thing. And considering what he did, I mean, at his age, we have to really think about that. I mean, at 21 years old, I know he missed some time, but the fact that he put up a sub 10% K rate, you know, a good walk rate, he showed a feel to hit the ball hard. I know it didn't necessarily translate to the power like we thought. Bat to ball skills are so elite, and he's going to put so many balls in play that's only going to increase his home run potential, I think. And when we look at this, I mean, I just think it's too soon to judge him and jump off board. And if you are, like, I'll gladly take him in any league that you want to trade him to me in, if I'm in your league. But the reality is that Franco does a lot well. He may not be elite anywhere but batting average, but I still think that there's going to be 15 to 20 home run power. Now, those expectations are probably adjusted. Like, at some point as a prospect, I think people are going too high on him. And we both said that. But the reality is he doesn't chase often. He swings, has great swing decisions, and he's capable of hitting the ball hard enough to produce the power that he needs. How many stolen bases he gets, I don't really know. He's got decent sprint speed. Seems like he's got a decent feel to steal as well. So to me, like, he profiles as like a 300-20-15 type. So where does that land you on a list? Like, it's not elite, but it's still pretty solid. And maybe there's more in the tank. Like, I'm just thinking about it now, like, where he's ranked. There's got to be more in the tank to where he's ranked.
And I do agree with all that. I'm certainly not, you know, jumping off board or out on him by any means. But it's like, all that's, you know, fair. But it's like, we have him ranked as an elite player.
Yeah.
So if we don't think he's going to be an elite player, we have him ranked as such. And, you know, I kind of like, I didn't mean to do a comp to Jeff McNeil, so please don't take that the wrong way. But people kind of forget Jeff McNeil. Yeah, he was bad last year in 2021, but Jeff McNeil is a 307 career hitter. So let's say if I told you that Wander Franco put up a year 318, 384, 531 slash, 23 home runs, you know, around 160 combined runs in RBI and like 10 steals. You take that as a win, right? You say that's a pretty good year. That's basically what Jeff McNeil did 2019. A little less speed, and he had 5 steals. But I just think we're treating him as a guy that's like a surefire elite player or for fantasy. And he's probably, I guess, he's going to be a very good hitter for a very long time. I would bet a lot of money that he's a 300 career hitter out of his career, maybe even 310, 315. But I just, you know, 15, 20 home runs, I agree with. 10 to 15 steals, agree with. But I don't know. Does that, like, that, what's best case scenario? Like what Tim Anderson's been doing? I don't know. It's just, I struggle with where I think the profile can be compared to age, compared to, you know, raw skills, compared to where I have him ranked. And I wonder, like, should he be top 20? I don't know. Should he be more like 30 to 40? Maybe that's a better range. It's just really hard with Wander Franco. I'm not saying he's bad, but I'm just saying I think he's going to be a better real life player than fantasy.
Yeah, and I agree. I don't disagree with that. I have him at 49 overall for Dynasty.
Oh, you do? Okay.
So it's not in the elite tier, but it's still a top tier shortstop. Like, and it's interesting because we always think about shortstop being so deep, but I'm looking at it, it's like why do I not have more like elite of the elite types, I guess.
Right.
But I think there's not a buying opportunity on Wander because the narrative just changes way too fast on prospects. Like,
oh, for sure.
And in some cases it's warranted. I mean, Jared Kelnick, just look at that. I mean, maybe he rebounds, but maybe Wander Franco's just a solid fantasy contributor, and that probably warrants him dropping even further down.
Yeah, and I'm looking at my rankings right now. At this very moment, I have him 29. I might even look to move him down. Like, who would you rather have? Who would you rather have moving forward in Dynasty, him or Ozzie Albies?
I mean, I'll take the batting average sacrifice, I guess, to get Albies' power speed because it's certainly better than Wander's.
How about Wander or Jazz?
Jazz.
Wander or Gunner?
Gunner.
I'm trying to find some more. Wander or O'Neill Cruz? Probably Wander at that point.
Well, yeah, it gets close. Like, that's where it gets close in this range, but...
Okay, then those guys are older. Yeah, trying to get younger players here. So, yeah, like, so those are all guys that I have currently have below Wander right now, but I'm starting to question, like, I do like Ozzie more for fantasy. So,
yep.
And Ozzie's only 25, like, he'll be 26 soon, but Jazz is, you know, only a couple years older. What is Wander? He's still only 21, so these guys are 3-4 years older, but I have more. We've seen the power speed from them, and we've seen the metrics, you know, for guys like O'Neal Cruz and Jazz, who haven't put it together for a full year yet, but have that upside. So that might be. It's funny. I feel like he's a buy low and a sell at the same time, which is weird to say, but like, I guess it depends on, you know, who's knocking on your door, right? Like, is it a big Wander supporter that, like, oh, this guy could still be top 10 dynasty? I guess you guys got to feel it out. I guess whoever, if you have him or don't have him, if the Wander, you know, manager in your league is kind of looking to sell, you definitely can buy low. If you have him and someone that values him a lot more than you do comes knocking on your door, I could see selling. So I guess it just kind of depends on your league and who you're talking to and what the situation is for Wander. But again, still good, but I just feel like he's a bit overvalued for fantasy purposes. All right. Next, the other really, you know, enticing name here that I just said was O'Neal Cruz. How high do we think O'Neal Cruz, even Jazz is not on our list now, but there's talks of him moving to shortstop. I don't know if that's cemented in stone yet. They just signed Gene Segura down there in Miami, so could have Segura at second and Jazz at short. We'll see. But how high do we see O'Neal Cruz and even Jazz here? We'll focus on O'Neal Cruz, but both of them, you think they can get up into, you know, I don't know if they get up into that top four, but maybe they settle in right behind it in that second tier.
Yeah, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility at all. I mean, the metrics are just through the roof with O'Neal Cruz. And he made some tangible changes where I think that it could really benefit him. I mean, we saw down the stretch where he seemed like a totally different, not totally different, but an improved player from the contact standpoint. And if that sticks, then, I mean, we're talking about a rare combo of 98th percentile sprint speed plus, like, basically 100%. It's 100 percentile max EV. It's pretty much 100 percentile, like 90th percentile EV as well. So, like, that's all through the roof. Where if all goes right, then we're talking about 40 home runs and 25 stolen bases. What cost of the average? I mean, daggum, if he just gives me a 250 average with that, then I think
take that.
Yeah, I think even then you're looking at a. Gosh, I don't know. I'm just looking at the top 10's tough to crack, but 40,
hey,
25,
40,
I mean,
yeah, that probably, as long as you have, let's say it's 250, 40, 25 with, let's say he gets up to 90 RBI. So let's say like 175 combined runs in RBI.
Yeah.
That's gonna be top 10, I think. I think top 10 is possible. Like if he makes those improvements and kind of reaches that level, top 10 is definitely possible. Probably ends up settling in the next tier, which is still going to be like top 25 or even top 20. But yeah, him and Jazz are two of the most exciting players in baseball. Kind of sucks that they're kind of buried in Pittsburgh and Miami.
Yeah.
And, you know, nobody's really going to know their name outside of us baseball folk. Like, they're not going to be like, you won't see kids walking around with O'Neal Cruz jerseys or Jazz Chisholm jerseys like they do with NBA and NFL. But they are incredibly exciting, and yeah, I can see both being top 20. Who I like more long-term? That's a tough question. Who do you think? Okay, let's break it down. Pure ceiling. Like, everything breaks right. They hit their 100% of that outcome. Who has the higher pure ceiling in your mind between O'Neal Cruz and Jazz Chisholm?
I don't think it's close. I think it's O'Neal Cruz.
You think it's O'Neal Cruz? I'm leaning that way as well.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a huge gap, but I would lean Cruz. But I think we've also seen Jazz make some adjustments that we haven't quite seen O'Neal Cruz make yet. So I could maybe say that there's a slightly higher floor with Jazz. I do wonder that huge frame with O'Neal Cruz, if pitchers expose that with a bigger zone, we'll see. But I think long-term, I have Jazz ranked ahead now just because he's shown more, but I do think there's a chance that we see O'Neal Cruz pass this year. It's going to be a fun year for both of them.
I think so. I hope we get full years from both of those players.
Fingers crossed, man.
I mean,
fingers crossed.
I was looking, and Tatis went 42-25 in 2021 with a 282 average. So I guess my question was, is it humanly possible to hit, like, would Cruz hit high? I mean, I feel like the average would be higher if he hit 40 home runs. Like higher than 250, but even still, so like Tatis was the clear cut one when after 2021, in my opinion, when he went 42-25 and then with a 282 average. So if Cruz was 40-25 with a 250 average, and I think he's got to be easily top 10.
Yeah, so I'm pulling something up real quick here. I want to compare. I want to see what the metrics were for Tatis that year compared to O'Neill Cruz this past year. So in was that 2021? All right. Okay. Never mind. I thought they'd be a little bit closer. They're not. Scratch this idea. 2021.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Tatis had a 21.3% barrel rate, 56% hard hit rate, 62% hard hit rate the previous year in 2020. Yeah, so exit velocities were higher as well. So not quite. Cruz isn't quite there yet, though. Cruz, 15.5% barrel rate last year, 46.1 hard hit rate. He had the hardest hit ball in the StatCast era, right? That 122.4, or was it still? Is it still Stanton?
No, I think Cruz has the hardest hit ball.
Yeah, I think he passed Stanton finally. It was like Stanton and Judge were hogging that leaderboard, but yeah, he definitely could. But that K rate, 35%, got to drop that down. Whiff rate, 35%, got to drop that down. Chase rate actually isn't terrible. It's worse than league average, but only by 2 percentage points. And zone contact was only slightly below league average. So you kind of would have thought it'd be lower, but it's actually not too bad in both of those metrics. So you got to cut down the swing and miss a little bit and the whiff rate, and we see a huge year from Cruz. But will anybody see it because he's in Pittsburgh? Who knows? But yeah, it'll be a really fun year. So I'm still trying. You know, the price tag on both is going to be, fairly high, just given the tools, the excitement, the buzz, the hype. But this is a situation where I would buy high because I'm not afraid to buy high if I think that price tag is only going to keep rising. And I think, as we both alluded to, I think that's definitely going to happen with both these guys here in 2023 and beyond. Let's jump into the next 10 here. 11 through 20 for me is Corey Seager, Ellie De La Cruz, who could very well jump up 6-7 spots early on this year. Tim Anderson, Andrés Giménez, Anthony Volpe at 15. 16 through 20 is Jeremy Pena, Jordan Lawler, Tommy Edman, Carlos Correa, and Willie Adames. Chris, who is your 11 through 20?
Hey, it's Dansby Swanson, Jeremy Pena, Xander Bogaerts, Tim Anderson, Anthony Volpe, Jordan Lawler, Tommy Edman, Willie Adames, CJ Abrams, and Marcelo Meyer.
So the first one I kind of wanted to, that really jumped out at me that was different in our rankings is Carlos Correa. You have him 10. I have him 19. And obviously yours are a little bit more OBP focused, so he gets a nice little bump there. But I don't know. With Correa, again, it's one of those situations where he's a very good real life player. Like, you wouldn't have teams like San Fran and the Mets. Well, again, Steve Cohen was first up. Okay, not to get off subject. Did you see that that meme where it's like, "Please, sir, you can't sign everyone." Steve Cohen pointing at a seagull, 4 years, $60 million. He's just signing everybody. I got a good laugh out of that. I saw it on both Facebook and Twitter. That was funny. But like, obviously, Correa is a very good real life player all around. You know, the leadership, the defense, the offense. That's why he's getting, these big contract offers from San Fran and the Mets and whoever else was in on Correa this past 2-3 months. But for fantasy, he kind of falls into that range where I don't think he should be kind of valued as high as he is. Like, he doesn't run anymore. That aspect of his game is completely gone. He has one steal combined in the last 4 years, and he only has six combined since the start of 2017. So you immediately eliminate the speed element right there. He's only attempted one steal in the last 3 years. But, you know, he hits for a solid average. He's 279 career. So he's always kind of right in that 280 range, give or take. Outside of that 1 year, he randomly dipped to 239 back in 2018. He's, you know, got good power, but he's never really fully kind of tapped into that in games. He's never had that 30-plus home run year, like that, you know, the big RBI year. I know that's team concept and all, but you'd figure, like, with the metrics he has, figured he'd have more kind of louder production. He's had good production, don't get me wrong, but I just think with, you know, eliminating the speed element entirely, and I said good but not great power metrics, he's good, but he's like back in top 100 for me. And I just, he's one where if you had him, I think he's more of a sell for me than a buy right now, even with going to the Mets.
Well, I'm not sure people want to buy him right now because of the all the weird stuff with, I don't think he's injured.
The mythical leg injury that happened 8 years ago or whatever else. Yeah, it's like, yeah. Like, what's wrong with Correa? I want to know, like, someone come out and tell me, hey, this is why, you know, these teams are kind of backed out of it.
It's just like buyer's remorse when, you know, they're like, oh, crap, we just spent how much money? Like,
even Steve Cohen, if Steve Cohen's having buyer's remorse, my word.
Yeah, there's an issue. It's, I mean, to me, like, he hits the ball hard enough where it's like he should be hitting more home runs. I mean, for the amount of barrels that he produces each year, the lack of home runs just doesn't line up. Well, and maybe
he doesn't pull enough. I think that's a big issue. Like, you only get 38.5% pull rate, which, you know, isn't bad. But at, you know, where he's been in Houston, you know, the last several years, or obviously with Minnesota this past year, but I think he really just didn't take advantage of the Crawford boxes like Bregman has.
Right.
So, you know, and then at this point, I don't know. I just don't know if I see him ever finding that level that we kind of think he could get to. Is he just going to be in this range where he's like, all right, 280, 25 home runs, and, you know, solid run and RBI totals. I think that's what he is at this point, which is good, but that's more like 75 to 100 range for me personally.
Yeah, he doesn't hit enough fly balls either, which is the other issue. Like, he's not going to get to the home runs because it's a heavy line drive profile, which is great for the batting average, but I really need to see more fly balls in the profile and pulled fly balls at that. With that being said, I mean, you look and the power metrics are all there, like everything you want to see. He just needs to be more consistent with the pull fly balls, and that's, I guess, the biggest thing. I think that in the Mets lineup, like, I'm pretty confident he's going to sign, like, with the Mets. I don't know. Like, you said OBP stuff. I mean, last year, 366 OBP, pretty solid. I mean, for his career, he's 357 OBP. He's actually been 366 each of the last 2 years, which is interesting to see. But even for average, if he's a 280 hitter, I think with 25 home runs, you know, I guess my question is, like, how much different is this than Corey Seager? Even though we saw Seager get to the home run power this year, but it was the first time that we saw that out of him. I guess, why can't he do it? Because Seager had never topped 26 home runs before. I know naturally some of that was because of injuries, but even full seasons, we saw like 26 home runs, 22 home runs, you know, then 16, like, not good. And then he really broke out this year to 33. So I'm just saying it's possible that he could, you know, really take that step with the power, and I'm not worried about the hit tool at all.
Yeah, I'm not like worried about him.
Yeah.
At all. You know, I guess I'm a bit more, you know, bullish on Seager's power, you know, a few years back than I am about Correa's now, because, you know, the quality of contact for Seager's been a bit better. Not like a huge difference, but I remember being just higher on Seager than I am on Correa now by a little bit here. And I remain higher. The average drop with Seager this past year, 245. I'm not worried whatsoever. I think he's definitely got a rebound there. There was nothing that really hinted. It's weird, too, because his zone contact went up this past year. His whiff rate went down. Yeah, the chase rate went up, too. But there was, you figure, like, all right, there's going to be something in the underlying metrics that signals the drop down to 245 from back-to-back years of 300. And yeah, he changed teams, but I don't think just going from the Dodgers to the Rangers makes you drop 60 points in average. Justin Rasta, he's a career 287 guy. So great buying opportunity for Seager right now, because the metrics are still very good. The stat cast littered in red. Barrel rate over 10%. Exit velocity 91.1. XBA was 283. X-slug was 510. One of the bigger differentials you'll see in baseball. Hard hit rate still over 45%. Still has his very good approach as well. So 100%. Go get Corey Seager in all your leagues right now if you can. So great buy low opportunity there.
I think so. I'm a big fan of Seager.
As am I. And I think that Texas lineup is going to be pretty damn good. That might be a top 10 lineup this year with adding, you know, adding Josh Young into it and the steps that Lowe made last year. And obviously the middle infield guy, Adelis Garcia. It's going to be a fun lineup for sure. Fun team getting DeGrom and Eovaldi. That might be a postseason team. We'll see. But all right, let's go ahead and take a quick break and we'll come back on the other side and get right back into it. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back from the break here. Let's get right back into it here. A lot of fun players in this range, obviously this entire position. But so some of the names are, we're starting to get into some of the non-elite names, but still have the upside or, you know, the former top prospects, a lot of intrigue here. Let's start with CJ Abrams, who debuted this past year, 302 plate appearances, 246, 280, 324 slash line. Two home runs and seven steals. So, again, 22-year-old debuting, far, far, far too soon to write him off. But at the same time, I think the questions we've had about his power still remain and might even have been amplified over the last, you know, 12 to 18 months or so, because he still has not tapped into that power. And I don't think any of us really predicted more than maybe 15 to 18, but can he even get there? Or is he more like, you know, flirting with double digits, 10, 8 to 12 range? Speed is there. It already was there. Seven steals, 91st percentile sprint speed. Not worried about that. Didn't strike out much at all. 16.6%. That's good to see. But quality of contact was, I can't even sugarcoat it. It was piss poor. 2.1% barrel rate, 86.5 average EV. Only walked 1.7% of the time. Again, I'm not like running to the door to get out of Abrams and dynasty leagues, but I'm not sure he's one I want to buy either. But you can't really sell him right now because I don't think he'd be selling low. So maybe he's a hold and you hope that he can rebuild some value this year. But I don't know. Where are you at on Abrams, Chris?
He's a really tough one to rank, honestly, because I do still believe in the upside and talent level of Abrams. And you look at a 21-year-old who was thrown into the fire in San Diego when he wasn't ready, and I think it stunted his growth. Like, I really do believe that it was the wrong choice. He wasn't ready.
100% agree on that.
And it affected him. And then you're traded across the country to Washington, and part of, you know, one of the biggest trades ever. So that also has an effect because he's probably pressing a lot. Like he was probably pressing to prove a point when he debuted. Then he slumped, he struggled, and then you get traded for Soto, and of course you've got to put on a show with your new team. And we even saw the bumps there. At the end of the day, though, I don't think my long-term outlook on Abrams has changed too much. I think there's still a hitter that's capable of hitting 15 home runs and stealing you 30 bases with a respectable average. I think the average was probably his biggest downfall this year. But I will say, I expect that to improve this year in his second full season. It should be easy for him to improve his contact rates closer to what we saw in the minors. But right now, it hasn't looked great. But again, I'm willing to give him a chance just because the circumstances around it, just being thrown into the fire and being traded across the country. Abrams is going to get every chance to succeed this year, and I think we see him take it and run with it.
Yeah, at least he has the opportunity, right? Because who are they going to start over him there in Washington? But yeah, and a lot of the plate discipline metrics weren't even that bad. Zone contact was actually above league average, 83.7%. The whiff rate was better than league average, 22.3%. Just the chase rate was through the roof, 41.2%. But, you know, outside of that,
wasn't a lot of red flags in that regard. Yeah, I haven't really changed my kind of thought process on him a ton. I'm just those questions about can he even get to 15? I think he could. He has the raw power to, I think, still. But I'm starting to question just a little more where that power ends up. And is he more, like I said, more closer to 10 than 15, which might not sound like a big difference, but it kind of is when you're talking about those types of numbers. But I want to see him a little more patience, start hitting more, balls in the air, 52.5% ground ball rate this past year, using that speed, just run wild, Abrams. At least do that. You have the speed to run wild. We saw that in the minor leagues. So hopefully he can settle in this year and return some solid value in all formats. And then a couple other, former top prospects that, have had a, tumultuous MLB career, but, started showing a little bit of signs of life this past year. Gavin Lux and Bryson Stott, Chris, out of these two, is there one that you're more willing to buy into right now in dynasty leagues, or are they kind of two guys you're not really excited about right now?
I feel like Lux just is who he is at this point. And even hate to say that but at the end of the day, it was really one elite year from him, and we haven't gotten a ton since. There's always a chance that he still steps up. I mean, he's just 25, so nowhere near the prime of his career. I'm afraid that we just went way too high on him when he had that great minor league season in 2019, where he just went off the rails. And he's another where he may have been pushed to the majors too quick. And we saw him debut in 2019. But then, the weird COVID year in 2020, he didn't get consistent at bats after he debuted in 2019 or 2020, or 2021 for that matter. And then we kept saying, well, he needs consistent at bats, and he got it for the most part in 2022, and it was just kind of meh. It's the best way to describe it. He does some things well. He makes good zone contact. The issues are he hits the ball on the ground too much. Not enough juice on the fly balls to get the home run to fly ball rate up. And overall, it's just kind of a bland profile. I am semi-intrigued by Bryson Stott, though. I think that Stott still has much more in the tank that we haven't seen. He's got a sweet swing. I really like what he brings to the table. The question is, he probably hits at the very bottom of that lineup at this point, just based on the signings. So he's not going to accumulate the plate appearances. But last year we saw him, go double digits in home runs and stolen bases. Not impressive at 10-12, but still, I thought it was solid for a rookie. Hit 234. I think there can be improvements there, especially given, he ran an 85% contact rate and an 89% zone contact rate. Those are both really solid numbers for a hitter to hit 234. I'm just confused because his zone contact rate was 4% above league average. The overall contact rate was 10 percentage points above league average. It didn't translate to the batting average this year, but that's not to say it can't. So I'm hoping that we see that improvement. He did have a 274 BABIP. Some bad luck there. I think Stott could have a really solid year this year. Solid as in 15-15 with a 260 average.
Yeah, I think he's I don't know if poor man's Tim Anderson's the right term. Poor man's Tim Anderson or something like that. I don't know. Yeah. I think that's very fair, though. 260, 15-15. Like he showed he can hit for average in the minor leagues. Like you mentioned the contact rates, so I won't say that. So say those again. So yeah, I think it's definitely there to in that ballpark. Obviously, nice ballpark. And I still think he'll have, if he's starting every day, which he should, solid amount of even runs and RBIs, more than most, bottom third of the order hitters, because that is not a bad bat in that lineup 1-9, especially when Bryce Harper gets back. So. Yeah, I think if you can accept what Stott is, that he's ever going to be a guy that you start at second base or shortstop, but maybe maybe he's not even going to be a great middle infield target, but maybe he's like a back end MI type of guy, or a good depth guy depending on your league depth, or a guy you throw at utility, something like that. A good depth kind of a piece that you can throw in if someone gets hurt. So I think he's fine. I think Lux is fine too. I actually have them back to back. I have Lux once what ahead of Stott. And yeah, if you can accept what they are now, kind of stop dreaming on more, I think they're both fine assets here. One other one here, I wanted a little debate here. Two young guys, Jeremy Pena and Vaughn Grissom. Obviously, we are expecting Vaughn Grissom to move over to shortstop. So both these guys are fairly close in my rankings here. We didn't list Vaughn Grissom yet because he has not gained eligibility as of now. But is there one of these two that you prefer? Is there one that you think can distance themselves from the other? Or are you kind of feeling that these guys are pretty close long-term?
I think that Jeremy Pena is probably the better fantasy asset. He made some tweaks and changes down the stretch that really paid off for him. I mean, he basically just killed his leg kick. And after that, we saw the numbers take off. I mean, we're talking about the World Series MVP. And let me pull up exactly when this change was made. But to me, like, what he did this year as a rookie, going 22-11 with a .253 average, like, I think there's room for growth, especially given his zone contact. I mean, 87%, again, really good. As we talked about stats, like, 87.3 is good zone contact. The problem with Pena is the chase rate of 41%. So that's going to have to improve. I think it can improve. The approach definitely improved down the stretch, and the results came with it. We saw him dominate the postseason, and if I'm not mistaken, the change was made like around September 12th, I think I remember hearing. Let me just run the math there and see. I'm actually just going to, let's just, you know, do all September for what it's worth. In all of September, 121 plate appearances, 6 home runs, 4 stolen bases, .278 average. Also, let's just look at the plate discipline metrics then. Still a high O swing, which is a bit concerning. But his zone contact was 90.7% in September. I don't remember. I need to find where I read that. And I remember, I swore I tweeted something about it, but maybe not.
I think you definitely did tweet something about it. I remember that.
I thought so too, but I just couldn't find it.
I don't remember when it was, but I definitely remember you tweeting something about that. I want to say it happens like early August or something like that.
Yeah, I don't remember. But anyway, the change was tangible, and the change actually had like tangible results with it. So I do think Jeremy Pena has the more power. I don't even say he has the more power upside, I think. But Vaughn Grissom is like sneaky on the base paths. Like, I think Vaughn Grissom could approach 2020, and he could come with a serviceable average too. So both these will be interesting to follow. And maybe I'm wrong for saying Pena could distance himself. And at the end of the day, like, man, people think Vaughn Grissom can't be a shortstop. And I'm sorry to tell you, but you're wrong. Like, everybody's like, well, the scout said that I'll just be honest, like, professional scouts just crap on players. Like, that's what they do. And Vaughn Grissom is athletic enough and solid enough player. And he's only 21 years old. Like, he's going to get better. Ron Washington would not have promoted him as this guy that he thought could be the shortstop if he wasn't confident in him. Like, Ron Washington knows infielders better than anybody. So to me, I think he's going to consistently get better, and Grissom's going to be a solid shortstop.
Yeah, for me, long-term, and I totally agree about, you know, Grissom playing shortstop. And I think it's part of the reason why they're, you know, willing to let Dansby go outside of the price tag that he got from the Chicago Cubs. But I think overall, you look at raw skills, I don't think there's a big gap. But I think if either one were to distance themselves from the other, it probably would be Pena if he takes advantage of his home ballpark. I think if he learns how to maximize that, I think he definitely could. I think there's, you know, like I said, similar profiles, but I think this is a little bit more potential across the board for maybe not in steals, but I think you could see him getting up 25, 26, 27 home runs, something like that. Maybe even flirt with 30. I won't entirely rule that out, though. I'd bet more on that the mid-20s range. And yeah, I think definitely the average could tick back up as well. So maybe looking at 275, 25, 10 type, and then maybe Grissom's around, you know, 275. 15-20, something like that. So I like both of them long-term. I think they're going to be kind of guys that flirt with top 10 status. Maybe they never get inside the top 10 or sneak into the back end. It's just such a loaded position where like right now we're talking about guys like O'Neill Cruz and you know, Dansby Swanson and Xander Bogaerts are right around like 8, 9, 10 for us right now. Gunnar Henderson and stuff, guys like that. So it's just hard to break into the top 10 of this position. But at second base, you know, obviously they'd be a little bit higher. But I'm fine with both these guys. They're both target line. I think the price tags are both fairly reasonable, more so for Grissom. Obviously, Pena winning World Series MVP adds a little bit to his value just because, you know, he was in the news and he was in the bright lights, and that just has that effect on him. So, but in general, I like both these guys. I think they're going to be fine here. You know, any interest anymore in like a Javier Baez type, like even at a low price, like a Mondesi, any interest at all in those guys anymore, Chris, or are you just done with those two? I think I'm mostly done. I don't think Baez, the skills are just, we saw him, like the profile is fun, but scary. And now he's in Comerica. So like, I don't know. I don't want anything to do with Baez anymore.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, the price is pretty depleted on both. I think I've drafted both at least once this offseason just because they go so late. And yeah, it's not good. There's not much good in the profile, I don't think. But power speed is intriguing with both, which is the only reason to consider drafting them. And in a dynasty format, like, they could be interesting, but I don't think you can rely on them to be in your starting lineup every day. So if they're a bench piece and you can acquire them cheaply, then I probably would at least consider, because Mondesi's going to have a week where he steals 14 bases in one week. And so if you happen to catch him in that week in your lineup, then you killed it. So I think there's a place for him on a roster, but there's not a place to start them consistently, I don't think, unfortunately. It's just ugly, ugly profile at this point.
Yeah. At this point, if the price was low enough where I only have to give up maybe a couple prospects or two that I don't think I'm going to, you know, hate trading, then yeah, I could see getting those guys if the price was right. But I don't know. I think that there's always going to be somebody that likes Mondesi more than me, always will be. And there's always going to be somebody that probably likes Javier Baez more than me. I have Baez 29 in my rankings right now, and Mondesi is 34. So, and he's right in the middle of a lot of prospects that I'd probably rather have at this point. I'd rather take a, you know, stab at, you know, Jackson Holliday or a Luis Angel Acuña or something like that. And he's even behind, you know, guys like Gavin Lux and Bryson Stott at this point. Real quick, let's end it here. We're getting close to the hour mark. Let's finish off our rankings and then get out of here, Chris. Let's go 21 through 40 here, because this position is so deep here. For me, I have Tovar 21, Abrams 22, Nolvi Marte 23, 24, 25, Oswald Peraza, Royce Lewis, 26 through 30, Marcelo Mayer, Ahmed Rosario, Nico Horner, Baez, Gavin Lux, 31 to 35, Bryson Stott, Jackson Holliday, Mondesi, Luis Angel Acuña, Luciano, Mason Wynn, Teodoro Estrada, Christopher Morel, Jordan Westberg, who I think I'll probably actually move up a little bit here, and Adell Amador, with Luis Urias and Nick Gordon kind of close by with some of the prospects like Edwin Arroyo, Rocio, House, guys like that. Who do you got 21 through 40, Chris?
All right, so it starts with Ezekiel Tovar, which I feel like I need to move him up. Like, I've got him above Meyer, so I need to move up. But then followed by Royce Lewis, Jackson Holliday, Nolvi Marte, Marco Luciano, man, the prospects here, Luis Urias, Mason Wynn, Jordan Westberg, Brayon Rocio, Nico Horner, which I also feel like Horner's probably should be ranked higher than he is. But anyway, another story for another day. Ahmed Rosario, probably could also move him up. Ray Mateo, Javier Baez is 32, followed by Colson Montgomery, Oswald Peraza, who I also like a higher, I think. Man, a lot of adjusting as I'm reading. Like, so this is a very helpful exercise. Brady House, Edwin Arroyo, Adell Amador, Zidane Rafaela, and Matt McClain to round out that 40th spot.
So yeah, a lot of fun names there. Obviously, a lot of prospect names that we already talked about last episode. So go check that out if you want to hear about all the elite and fun prospects at this episode. But that is going to wrap us up for this episode. We hope everyone enjoyed it, and thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. Join us again next time for the outfield position, which will be even more deep and fun, as it always is. But until then, everyone take care.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.